Cindy leading the kids class. Well, this morning we're in Daniel chapter 7. We'll read the first 14 verses to begin with. We'll look at the next 14, the last 14 next week. Daniel chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. The text says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. They said thus to it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. There in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. I watched until thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were open. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away. His kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. We'll look at the rest of that next week. You see, to begin with, right at the very first verse in chapter 7, it says, in the year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. I thought Belshazzar was dead. Here we are going back to Belshazzar. So what is going on here? Why have we been covering Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, and Belshazzar has been killed? And then Darius, the Persians, took over Babylon. John talked about that, Daniel in the lion's den, and now all of a sudden we see Belshazzar again. So why is it that the events in this book are not put into chronological order? Why are they not kept in chronological order? Yeah, I don't have the answer to that necessarily. I've got what I thought is a pretty good guess at why that is the case. But the first 6 chapters we've covered, you know what we talked about. The first chapter, Daniel appealed to his, after they were carried into captivity, he appealed to his superior let them eat a special diet and not eat the things that they were given to eat. And we saw that in chapter 1. Chapter 2, remember Nebuchadnezzar had a dream that troubled him, and he wanted to know what it meant, and to protect himself from hearing just somebody blabbering off at the mouth trying to get attention for themselves, he made his magicians and sorcerers or wherever they were to not only tell him the meaning of the dream, but tell him what the dream was. And of course, you remember no one could do that, of course, except for Daniel. Daniel did it. We saw the image there that he made. Chapter 3, I believe, was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were there and were thrown in the fiery furnace. Remember that account of that story. Chapter 4 was a unique chapter in the sense that it was written firsthand, first person, by Nebuchadnezzar himself, telling what had happened to him as far as him losing his mind and God correcting him. God letting him be insane for 7 years. Chapter 5 was, what was chapter 5? I'm going blank here. Chapter 5 was all Belshazzar. It was the handwriting on the wall. My favorite chapter. Handwriting on the wall, how Belshazzar was called to judgment, and that very day, that very night, the Persians invaded Babylon and Belshazzar was killed. Darius, the Mede, the Persians took over Babylon, and Darius the Mede was set over it. And we saw in chapter 6 the account of Daniel and the lion's den. So all those six chapters were exciting. They were good stories. They were good things that taught us a lot about Daniel, taught us a lot about God, taught us a lot about Nebuchadnezzar, and all these people. But they were historical narratives that took place back in the late 500s or early 600 B.C. But starting in chapter 7 through chapter 12, the content of the book of Daniel is different. There are still a lot of visions and dreams, but they are obviously prophetic in content. And perhaps some of those dreams happened back in when Belshazzar was king. We'll see that this week and next week, or 2 weeks from now as well, in chapter 7 and 8. So I'm guessing that the reason that the chapters and the events are grouped as they are is to put all of the prophetic things at the end of the book, put them together, and all of the stories that happen in the historical narrative, put them together. So you got 1 through 6 is mostly historical narrative, 7 through 12 is mostly prophetic. Maybe that's not why it was or not, but it's a difference that I noticed. Another thing that happens here in Daniel chapter 7 is Daniel begins to speak, and to, the account is given in the first person. Daniel is saying, I did this, I did that, here's what I saw. This thing. It's not just telling from a third person what Daniel happened to Daniel. Daniel was telling it himself. Another thing I want to remind us of is the interesting place that Nebuchadnezzar has in biblical history. As we've went through the book of Daniel, I've thought of this and kind of give it a little thought to see about this, but I don't know of any other secular pagan person in the scriptures who is given, it seems, the prominent position in the biblical story as Daniel is. Perhaps Nebuchadnezzar, it seems many people think, according to what we looked at, that Nebuchadnezzar in the latter part of his life became a believer. He became a worshiper of the one true God. But you have in the Bible a pagan Babylonian king writing pretty much a chapter in the book of Daniel. You have Nebuchadnezzar praising God. You have him saying some doctrinally deep things about God. You don't see that from any other person that I can think of in the scripture. So here we are, beginning chapter 7. Now I want us to look at several things here, and we're going to just look at what he sees to begin with, and next week we're going to kind of dive in a little bit at least to what it means, the interpretation of it, and the interpretation that Daniel hears from someone on the scene there. So let's look again at verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. And he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts, saying, verse 2, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. I think it's not a stretch to conclude that this sea, this great sea, could have been a sea that didn't even exist in Daniel's vision and his dream. But I doubt it. I think it's more than likely it is the Mediterranean Sea. It was called the Great Sea. And Daniel sees things in his dream that were really places. He sees people who were really people. So he sees here on this great sea the four winds of heaven. We're going to see a lot of numbers. We're going to see a lot of things that we automatically begin to think this can't be taken literally. So we have to decide that kind of as we go along through here. And this perhaps is the first one, the four winds of heaven. What are the four winds of heaven doing? They're stirring up the great sea, the Mediterranean Sea. The sea is becoming stirred up, or white-capped, or vicious storms are appearing upon the sea that are caused by the four winds. What is significant and special about the four winds? Okay, personally, I don't think anything. We use the terms four, like the four corners of the earth. What do we mean when we say the four corners of the earth? We mean everywhere, right? We mean all directions, right? The four is significant of, or reminds us of, north, south, east, and west. So when he says the four winds of the heavens, he's talking about everywhere you could see upon the face of the sea, everywhere you could see upon the earth, and all corners of the earth, there is something that is causing a tumult in this sea. We sung, very first song we sang this morning, shout to the north and the south, sing to the east and the west, Jesus is Savior of all, Lord of heaven and earth. And now that usage of those in that song, shout to the north and the south, sing to the east and the west, there's no significant meaning to those words, north, south, east, and west, except one. We're talking about everywhere. Shout to the whole world that Jesus is Lord. Shout to all of the earth that Jesus is Lord of heaven and earth. So it's just a reference that we use even today of a meaning all places, from everywhere, from every angle. So we see this storm. We see something stirring up the sea. And we're going to see, and these beasts come from the sea. We're going to see a little later, I think next week, that it mentions that the beast came from the earth. Now, someone's always looking for contradictions, and there's one. Okay? But it's not. All right? It still means the same thing. They arise from within what is. They come from what is. For first place, in the dream, he sees the sea. In the interpretation, it's told that means the earth. So there's no contradiction. Okay? So here we've got this dream. Daniel sees a stormy sea, and he sees four beasts coming out of it. And then he begins to describe the four beasts. Verse 3, four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. Why are they beasts? When you think of the word beast, what comes to your mind? Evil. Okay.
Monster.
A monster. All right, some type of inhuman type thing, perhaps. If we use beast in reference to a human being, we're dramatizing something about that human, aren't we? Somebody might say some man is a beast. That might mean he's super strong. He's a super athlete in whatever field he's in. We could mean call a man a beast, and we might mean that he's evil, that he is wicked. All right, notice Daniel doesn't see four lambs coming up from the sea. He sees four beasts. So right off the bat, it's implied, and it puts the thought in our head that these beasts are not nice beasts. Right? We get the idea from the very start that this is not good, that they are not good. Verse 4, he looks at the very first one. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. So here he sees a beast that looks like a lion, except it has wings. He says, I watched till its wings were plucked off. So you get the idea there that this damages the beast. This limits the beast's power. This limits the beast's ability to do whatever he would do because his wings were plucked off. All right, what's the saying? I just thought of this. I should probably bring it up. We have a saying in clipped his wings. That means the same thing, right? So it's similar to that. He said, watch, so his wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. So this beast raises up, and Daniel now gets the idea that something about this beast is manly. Perhaps it's just that he's walking on 2 of his feet. All right? And a man's heart was given to it. So we're even more so. We see that this beast, this first beast, that looks like a lion with four wings that get clipped, and now he's raised up, and we see that there's something about this beast that is like a man. A man's heart was given to him. This man, this beast apparently could think like a man. He could reason like a man. He could have emotions that a man would have. All right, that a human being would have. So there's this first beast. The second beast in verse 5. Suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. I don't know. I have trouble picturing that. When I picture that, I picture the bear laying down. But somehow it's coming out of the sea. It's raised up on one side, and we see 3 ribs in its mouth, between its teeth. So this bear is already in the process of devouring something, or he has already finished devouring something. He's got 3 ribs in his mouth. And someone says to this bear, says, and they said thus to it. We don't know who they is. We don't know who told the bear this. But somehow the bear is told, and Daniel hears it. Bear is told to come up and devour much flesh. So we see, again, our implications of this beast are accurate, that these beasts are evil. They are come to destroy. Verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. Now, this is a weird-looking beast, isn't it? A leopard, a four-headed leopard with four wings. Dominion given to this beast. This beast comes up out of the sea, and power and authority is given to it. He is given the ability to reign and to rule over the earth, or the parts of the earth at least. And then number 7, verse 7, we see the fourth beast. After this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Now notice, this beast is not compared to another animal. It doesn't say he was like a lion, it doesn't say he's like a leopard, an elephant, or any other thing. He describes him not as something similar, but as something terrible, as something dreadful. His descriptions are words such as that: dreadful, terrible, exceedingly strong, huge iron teeth with which it was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. He was different from all the other the first three beasts. Then he adds the last phrase there: it had 10 horns. Verse 8, he says, I was considering the horns. There was another horn, a little one, coming up among them. So you picture, in my mind, I picture these 10 horns. It's like losing your baby teeth and your permanent teeth come in. They push out your baby teeth. These 10 horns are there. Another horn starts coming out of, I assume, the beast's head. And it dislodges and uproots three of the horns as it comes in. It goes on and says, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn, this little horn, that uproots the three, and that comes in later, were eyes, like the eyes of a man. Here we see the second of the four beasts who is compared in some way to a man. Then the last phrase is apparently an important phrase because he uses it three or four more times throughout this chapter. This little horn is speaking pompous words. He's speaking, some of your verses may say, great things. But the idea is that this little horn is, I don't want to use the word boasting, but he thinks very highly of himself. He has grand schemes to be the total beast. Not just one horn who uproots three. He is the whole thing. He's speaking pompous words about, I'm assuming, himself. About his greatness, his abilities. All right? And some of that is speculation on my part, but I don't think very, very much. Verse 9. I watched till the thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. Who is this Ancient of Days? God. This is God, referred to as the Ancient of Days. Why would God be given a name? And we see descriptive names given of God throughout all of the Bible, right? We sung a lot of them in the song this morning. Almighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Right? We saw all these names given to God. We sung the song Ancient of Days this morning in reference to God. What does that word, why is that a good name for God? What is it about God that we could refer to Him as Ancient of Days? When you think of the word ancient, what do you think of?
Old.
Old, right? Oh, we might would think of old and decrepit. Old and losing strength. Old and failing health. We don't think of that when we think of this, do we? Ancient of days. We think of old, and not just because it's old, but what comes with being old that is a good reference for God? Wisdom. Wisdom, right. Someone who has been around the block. Someone who knows more than the young pups, right? Someone who who sees things as they are, who understands things because they are old, because they have much experience. Ancient of days. A reference to a God who has always been, a God who is eternal, a God who is everlasting, and a God who knows all things. He sees this Ancient of Days. The thrones are put in place. It looks like they're setting up a scene. Why are they setting up a scene? We'll see. They set up the scene and the thrones are set up. The Ancient of Days is seated upon the throne. It describes this Ancient of Days, his garment as white as snow. What does that tell us about God? He's pure. He is absolutely, totally, perfectly pure. The hair of his head was like pure wool. Again, the color being implied to be white as wool. Here you get all these ideas of purity. You get the idea of his hair, white hair, being one of wisdom. Right? His throne was like a fiery flame. Fiery flame. What would that be a reference to? Purifying. Somebody say purifying. Who said that?
David.
David. What did you say, David?
Purifying fire.
A purifying fire. Okay. His wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued. It came forth from before him. Three or four different ways Daniel describes what he sees coming forth from the Ancient of Days who's sitting on the throne. And all of these things, it seems like, have reference to fire, to judgment, to a purifying effect on something. The last part of verse 10, 1,000 thousands ministered to him. Okay, I don't think there's anything significant about 1,000 in that sense. It's just saying a bunch. A lot of people, a lot of something, a lot of some things were ministering to the Ancient of Days. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were open. That last sentence ought to give us pause. That the books might be open. What kind of books are these? Books of the history of the world, perhaps, the books of judgment to declare read out who is guilty or who is, you know, what the judgment that would come upon someone. Doesn't sound good, does it? The books were open. Then verse 11, he says, I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. This guy's still talking. He's still saying whatever it is he's saying. Which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain. And its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So here we've got this beast, this fourth beast, who it seems like a tiny part of this fourth beast is this one little horn. But this one little horn of this great, terrible, exceedingly wicked beast is getting all the attention. He's the one making a lot of racket. And when he stand, or when this beast apparently stands before the throne and God's judgment from this fiery throne comes forth, he doesn't just pick on the beast or the horn, does he? The whole beast is destroyed. He destroys this beast, horn and all. As for the rest of the beast, verse 12, they had their dominion taken away. So we hear, get a little idea here that wasn't spelled out exactly when all these beasts came out of the sea. But apparently as they come from the sea, they are given dominion. Said one of them was, they were given dominion to rule and reign over some kingdom of theirs. Now we see that that dominion, that authority is taken away. It has been taken away. And yet they're not destroyed at the moment like this fourth beast was. All right. Verse 13. I was watching the night visions. And behold, one like the Son of Man. Who is the Son of Man? Jesus. If I remember correctly, Jesus used these three words to refer to himself far more than he referred to himself in any other way. I think in particular in the book of Luke, if I'm not mistaken, Jesus refers to himself, the Son of Man is this. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. The Son of Man. When you see the Son of Man coming, he referred to himself many times using those three words, Son of Man. So there's no doubt that what he sees here, one like the Son of Man, is a reference to Jesus. Coming with the clouds of heaven. So when does this take place? Some people, and I'm not saying that this is right or wrong, it's just a new thought to me. Some people reference this as to being when Jesus ascended after his resurrection, and here the 40 days, he ascended in the clouds to heaven, that is perhaps that time when Jesus comes to the Ancient of Days on the throne. Most people would tend to think it is at the end of time, during this time of judgment that we see here in verse 10. But he comes, the Son of Man, comes before this throne, before the Ancient of Days. And they bring him, I don't know who they are, perhaps angels, perhaps the court attendants. We don't know, they brought Jesus near before God. Verse 14, then to him, to the Son of Man, was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. Now at that point, you can go on and see the next verse. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, within my body, and these visions troubled me. Daniel doesn't understand everything that he sees here. It's like, I don't understand everything I read here, right? But he's troubled, and we're going to see what happens next week with the rest of that. But also just give you an idea, there are some things that in my mind that about these things. Number one is this, and if you see on the back page, I've got a chart there, a table. And if you see the top line going crossways, we've got Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2 of Daniel to deal with. We've got Daniel's vision in chapter 7 that we're looking at right now. Next week is Daniel's vision in chapter 8. And you see I've got that just kind of gray scale, but not where you see, because I don't not talk about that at all. Some people, it may not even fit in this chart at all. Okay, but it's there. Then the next item is the common interpretation of some of these things, and then the last one, notes and comments. Next week, there may be more things on there, there may be adding more things to it. But that's the four, the headings across the top. Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2 starts, he has a dream of an image. This image was a head of gold. Then a chest and arms of silver, thighs and belly of bronze, and then his legs and feet were iron and a mixture of iron and clay. In chapter 2 of Daniel, when Daniel interprets this dream, he tells Nebuchadnezzar something that we don't have to guess about. In Daniel's interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, that Nebuchadnezzar saw the image, Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, the gold head that you saw in that image is you. So one thing I don't have to interpret, I don't have to guess, I don't have to read and see what other people say about it, because the Bible said it. The interpretation is given to us that in chapter 2, the head was Nebuchadnezzar. So we've got that's set in stone. But then you've got in Nebuchadnezzar's, I'm going straight down the column in chapter 2 there, you've got to say, okay, if Nebuchadnezzar's the head, who is the chest of silver? Who's the chest and arms of silver? But doesn't tell us who they are. And then you've got this belly and thighs of bronze. Who are they? But doesn't tell us who they are. And then it's got legs of iron and feet of mixture of clay and iron. Who is that? Doesn't tell us who that is. Now we might, reason might suggest to us that if the head was a kingdom, if it was the king of Babylon and the Babylonian Empire, that it might suggest to us that these next ones are going to be that as well. In fact, I think he tells us that in chapter 2, that they are ones who will come after Babylon, but it doesn't say who they are. So it seems that we know there are kingdoms that are coming after the Babylonian Empire, but we don't know who. We don't know when. And then we saw a stone that came and rolled down this mountain and destroyed this image. And the stone grew until it became a great mountain. And it's pretty easy to see from that is God's judgment upon these kingdoms and this image. And it's God himself and the kingdom of God who then takes over the world or fills the world. That's not a stretch to see that in chapter 2. Then we get to this chapter and we see the first beast, we see the second beast, we see the third beast, we see the fourth beast, and then we see a judgment that comes and destroys the fourth beast and takes all their dominion away. What is similar about those two chapters? One is this. They both start in Nebuchadnezzar's or Daniel's time. They're given in Daniel's time. They both end with judgment from God against the four. They both have four parts to them. Most commentators think that these are pretty much parallel dreams. They have parallel meanings. They pretty much mean the same thing. If one, the second beast represents here in Daniel 2 or Daniel 7, then it represents the same thing in Daniel 2. So it's commonly believed that these are parallel visions. The difference is the one in chapter 7 is much more detailed, especially toward the end of it, where the judgment comes. There's a lot more detail given to that. Now, I've got the common interpretation column there. This is typically what most people think these are. I don't know that this is what they are. I just know it's what most people think they are. I know the first one was the Babylonian Empire. It tells us that. Most people say the second one was the Mede and the Persians, which corresponded to the bear with three ribs in his mouth. Automatically, you want to know, what's the three ribs? What do they represent? Besides some good eating. All right. It's believed that suggested that one of them is three nations, powerful nations that the Medes and the Persians conquered. And I can't remember whether Assyria was one, Egypt was one, and there's one more that I'm going blank on. That it was perhaps those three things represent the three ribs. I don't know. Then that was followed by the Greek Empire. Alexander the Great, he is represented as thought of as the leopard with four wings and four heads. Now, how can Alexander the Great be a leopard with four wings and four heads? The idea is that the leopard is swift. He's swift to come on the scene, swift to do his thing. Alexander the Great, his kingdom came on at a fast pace. It was there. Very quickly, in 10 years, Alexander the Great ruled the then known world. 10 years. Like a leopard. After Alexander the Great died, his kingdom was divided. It was split up into four different kingdoms. And supposedly that is a reference to the four heads on this leopard that we see in our chapter here in Daniel 7. The fourth one is believed to be the Roman Empire that came on the scene after or in 168 BC. This Roman Empire is referenced in our text with iron teeth. We see it in chapter 2 of iron and of iron mixed with clay. The thing that I don't know if it bothers me or not, but that is so out of balance, it seems, for me, is that you've got Nebuchadnezzar, you've got the Babylonian Empire that was ruled for 100 years, 200 years, whatever it was. Then you got the Medes and Persians. Well, look, I've got the dates listed down here. The Babylonian Empire is 70 years, 60 years. The Mede and Persian Empire was 200 years. Then you've got the Greek Empire, which was 170 years or so. Then you got the Roman Empire that started then. And the next thing we see is X number of years at this point, 2,600 years later, and still counting, where the judgment has not occurred yet. So how do you fit in this Roman Empire filling all of these 2,000 years? And the others were 100 or 200 years. It seems so out of balance. There are obviously some people put gaps in there here and there and do all these other things to explain that. I don't know. The things that I do believe, these visions started with Nebuchadnezzar. And I believe the judgment that we see is at the end of time when God judges the nations and the world. All these things that happen in the middle there, I'm not sure about. We see 10 horns. We see a little horn. We're going to talk about some of that next week as well. But read the rest of the chapter and read it again. And read it again. And we'll talk about the details of some of that next week. Let's pray.